I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, indeed. And I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota by Julie Weisenhorn. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, Denny, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Hope you and yours are doing the same. We actually are going to be getting in the 50s today.
I know it. It's spring at last, I think.
Yes.
I hope that we're past all the sub-zero stuff. And, oh, my gosh, it's been just a roller coaster this year.
It really has. And we'll talk. I have some good news and some not so good news as far as this week's. Well, no, it's not bad. But we're not totally out of the woods. It looks like it's going to be kind of a wet, windy week and maybe a little cool after Wednesday. But we'll talk about it. Nothing. It's spring weather, right? And we're getting moisture, which is very positive, not only for the farmers,
yes,
but for us, too, as far as our lawns and shrubs and growing things like that.
Definitely.
Let's invite our listeners to join in. We call it a Smart Garden Show. And if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie, by all means, don't wait. We want to get as many questions answered as we possibly can. You can call one number, and it's also the text number. So whatever's easier for you, 651-461-9226 for your lawn or garden type of question. Again, 651-461-9226. What are you doing these days now? I mean, in between the raindrops here, Julie, as far as lawn and garden.
Well, I have not been doing much in my garden. I did, Carl and I did prune our ornamental crab this past weekend, which was a huge job. It's a very large tree. So we took care of that, but it was clear that we should not be walking on our lawn right now. It's a very wet lawn, and it's quite shaded. So at this point, it was not dried out yet. So that's one thing I was kind of like tiptoeing around a little bit. But today I'm actually out at the Arboretum, and I'm going to be co-teaching a couple of workshops on hydrangea pruning with my colleague, Dr. Brandon Miller, who's a faculty in the Horticultural Science Department. So we are all set to go. We've got 30 people in the first session and 30 master gardeners in the second session. So it's going to be a full day of pruning.
Well, that sounds like fun. Well, we'll, as we like to do, mention the Arboretum. It's such a great place to visit, a great resource. We're so lucky to have that here.
I mean, it's a jewel.
Really, that's a good word. Yeah, it really is. We'll talk more about that as we move through this particular hour. Any kind of lawn or garden question, by all means, again, 651-461-9226. Here's a question I have my own mind recently. Texter says, is there a difference between seeding on a cold and wet spring day versus winter seeding? I assume dormant seeding.
Dormant seeding, yeah. I think that one of the things I would think about is when you go through dormant seeding, the birds have kind of huddled in for the winter. They're not going to be out eating your grass seed. I think if you're putting it down now, you may see some more bird activity around there pecking up that seed. So you might lose some of your seed. And I think the best time for doing lawn work is, of course, in the fall. And dormant seeding is great. And if you get a layer of snow after you dormant seed, that's the best conditions. So I think you can do some seeding now, but you might find more animals around eating the seed.
Okay. All right. I want to grab a phone call, but another text. Is it too early to apply preen to garden areas?
It is too early, but we're getting close to that. So our crabgrass control, which would be a pre-emergent like preen, should be laid down around mid-April to mid-May when before the crabgrass comes out of the ground. So most of the time people use preen for crabgrass, but you may be using it for some other weeds as well. So you need to know when that weed emerges, when it actually starts to come up, and then put that preen down before the seed emerges.
All right. Let's grab a phone call. I think Al is calling from St. Paul, I believe, this morning. Al, what is your question for Julie?
About 3 weeks ago, a man called in and he said he had some flowering crab apple trees that were girdled. And I just want to remind him that he could do bridge grafting. And probably the university website would tell all about it.
Okay.
So grafting. Yeah, and I'm not sure that we have a site on that. We do teach it in our plant propagation class, but I haven't seen a web page from the university about the grafting, side grafting. So he's talking about girdled trees, in other words, animals that have browsed or eaten through the bark and chewed through the vascular system, which is just below the cambium layer of the tree. And that cuts off the vessels so that the plants can't take up from the roots, they can't take up water and nutrients and get it to the rest of the tree. So you start to see dieback. And girdling is something that we encounter this time of year. Annie Claude, my colleague who specializes in fruits, wrote a good article in our Yard and Garden News about wildlife damage and what do you do about that. And she has a couple of good examples. So people could take a look at that. But I'm not sure about the grafting, the side grafting. I think I'm sure there's a way to do it. I'm not knowledgeable in that, though.
Okay. Here's a text that says, I planted Chicagoland green boxwood last summer. I burlapped them this winter. When can I take the burlap off?
Oh, good question. I think you could probably take those off pretty soon. I would, again, be a little concerned about animals feeding on them. So I would be a little cautious and probably put some fencing around them for a while until you start to see the growth and things kind of, the weather kind of settles down and you get a handle on the animals. But they would, rabbit would be feeding on those, certainly deer would too. But I think you could probably take that, but they would, rabbit would be feeding on those, certainly deer would too. But I think you could probably take that burlap off pretty quick here. We're not going to get those cold, cold winter winds. I hope not.
No,
anymore.
It's going to be a little breezy this coming week, and we'll talk about that in minutes. But it's not going to be certainly like.
And we have
that,
a lot of sunshine too, so they can go into photosynthesis and
feels good.
Be working.
I know we're going to take a quick break here, but here's something a texter sent in, and you and your colleagues have taught me this, and our listeners as well. And I'll just read it. It says, "I have been in the green industry for 37 years. I want to clarify two words. Soil is what plants grow in. Dirt is what gets on your hands and pants."
That's right.
I like the clarification.
Dirt is soil out of place.
Very
good.
That's
what we learn in our Soils 101.
Thanks for that qualification, whoever that was. So let's do this, Julie. Let's invite our listeners to join in on our Smart Garden Show. Any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in via this number, 651-461-9226. In the Twin Cities right now, we've moved up to 32 degrees, increasing clouds later, but right now they're calling the skies fair. 32 here on News Talk 830. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. It's our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour on 830 WCCO. Well, Julie, as usual, we have callers and we have texters, some things to keep you busy for the rest of the hour.
Excellent.
In fact, let's do this. Let's take the callers and then we'll pick up on our text messages. I think Bonnie is calling in from Shoreview, first of all, this morning. Bonnie, you're on CCO with Julie.
Hi. Actually, I'm calling for my son and daughter-in-law who moved into their home last fall in East Bethel. And their property has dozens and dozens of tall, tall pine trees on the lot.
Okay.
And that means they have millions and millions of pine needles on the ground. And they were going to try and clean all that up this spring. The question is, what do you do with all the pine needles?
Well, pine needles actually make a fabulous mulch. I wish I had a lot of pine trees on my property that I could rake up and have and use for mulch. So they're terrific. They knit together, so they hold together and don't run off from water. They also have enough air. They provide air so that water can get down to the roots of the plant. So I think what I would do if I were them is to decide where they wanted to put any garden beds, and I would rake up some of the pine needles then and use that for mulch around that. You can also rake it up and you can compost it too. So they could rake it up and compost the pine needles. But boy, they make a great mulch.
Yeah, true. Thanks, Bonnie.
It looks nice too.
Dexter says this, Julie, when starting plants from seed, when do you remove them from the heat mat and when to take the humidity dome off? I have tomatoes and peppers in the same flat, and the peppers come up a little later than the tomatoes. What do you think?
Sure. I have the same issue because I made the mistake of planting some flowers along with some of the faster-growing plants, and now I'm kind of thinking, oh, boy, I have to take the dome off. I took the dome off when the tallest plants bumped into the dome. Usually when a seedling has its second leaves, its first true leaves, actually, the little tiny leaves that come up first are little cotyledons, and they're really not true leaves. But when they put up those that first set of true leaves, then you can go ahead and transplant them too. So seedlings will grow well if they are taken out of the seedless mix and planted in a regular potting mix and grown like that for the last month or so before you can put them in the ground. So take the dome off when they've bumped into the dome, the tallest plants, and you can keep them on the seed mat, but just be aware that the bigger the plants get, the more water they'll need. So just do a good job of keeping them, you know, prevent them from drying out. And Natalie Hoidl, my colleague who specializes in vegetables, has written a great article in Yard and Garden News also on tips for healthy seedlings. So take a look at that, and she's got some good advice for what to do as those seedlings get larger.
Yeah, get on that website, extension.umn.edu. Yeah. We talk about that all the time for good reason. It's just a great resource. You guys do so much good work in that, and it shows. All right, let's see. I think Ed may be calling in, I think, from Worthington this morning. Thanks for waiting, Ed. What is your question for Julie?
2-year-old crown asparagus, proper way to plant those, and when can you harvest them?
Well, good for you for buying the 2-year-old crowns because you'll get to harvest them sooner. And normally with asparagus, you would dig down and bury those crowns, and then as they come up, you'd bury them a little bit more as they start to sprout, and keep burying them until they are poking through the ground, and let them grow another year. And I think by next year, you'll be able to harvest from them. So you're laying those crowns out, spread them out, like a web, you know, so that all the roots spread out. Put your soil on it. As they come up, put more soil on it, and so that you've kind of filled this hole, but you've got nice deep crowns. And you can look on our website under Vegetables A to Z and take a look at the asparagus page for additional information.
Okay. Here's a text that says, greetings. Appreciate your Saturday garden show. It gets me up and going.
Nice.
What would you recommend to plant for all-day sun, south exposure around the house? So they want a little hint on what would you recommend to plant for all-day sun with a southern exposure around the house?
Well, that would be a foundation planting. So foundation planting helps to blend your home, your building, into the rest of the landscape. And so you're looking for plants that are, you know, groups of shrubs, along with layers of perennial flowers, or you could also add in some annual flowers too. We have good information on different plant selection that would be suitable for that kind of a growing environment on our Plant Elements of Design database. So you can enter in the conditions that you have, and then click search, and it will come up with any plants that happen to fit that criteria. But you're really looking for shrubs that won't block your windows. If I'm I take it that this is, you know, you've got windows on your wall of your house, and that also aren't going to overgrow your beds. So your beds should be deep enough that you can plant the shrubs and then plant in front of them. So you have kind of a layered effect. It's called mixing and matching. And so really measure that space. Think about if that bed is deep enough and if you can make it deeper. In other words, from the house out into the yard, you'll want to have about 8 feet if you can. And then layer those plants from the tallest by the house out to the edge of the bed line.
All right. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take a break and have a look at that forecast. I want to alert Lucy and Tom and all the other callers and texters. We're going to come back with about another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. Our Smart Garden Show every Saturday here in the 8 o'clock hour on News Talk 830 WCCO. The weather's coming up. Hey, good morning. We're back to our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long here along with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Julie, as usual, callers and texters waiting in the wings.
All right.
Let's get to it. Let's see who's first. Lucy calling in from Hopkins, I believe, this morning. Lucy, thanks for waiting. What's your question for Julie?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I've got a large, well-established lawn. My family and I have been tending it for over a half century, and we manage it with practically no watering. We don't use fertilizer or herbicide because we've got a lot of clover and violets and dandelions and whatnot. We leave them there for the pollinators. Yesterday, the city took out a ginormous ash tree that had emerald ash borer that was on the right away on the side of my lawn. It was windy yesterday. They had to make a lot of topping cuts. I now have about a quarter of my yard fairly not covered to the point of choking the grass, but there's a lot of wood shavings in it, bigger than sawdust, smaller than wood chips. And I did a dormant seeding late November, which has not germinated yet. So I'm reluctant to use a leaf blower to suck up the chips or anything because I'll take up my grass seed. Are those shavings going to smother the lawn? Will they eventually just sort of decompose and fertilize the lawn? Or do I need to sacrifice my dormant seeding and use a leaf blower to try and suck up all those doggone shavings?
How deep are the shavings, do you think?
They are, except for right in the immediate vicinity of the stump where I know I'm going to have a mess and have to reseed.
Right.
They are mostly just polka dotted around the lawn.
Okay. I think those areas will be okay. And I think you're right. You're going to have to clean up the area where it's really deep. If it's just kind of polka dotted or just kind of scattered across your lawn, it should be okay. You could do any light raking that once your seeds start to germinate, and you could do some light raking if you need to. But I think you'll be okay on the more polka dot areas, as you call them. But, yeah, around that stump, you'll have to rake up or pick up. I'd pick up as much as you can just with your hands or with a shovel, depending how deep it is, and then, you know, try to spread it out and see if that helps.
Yeah,
it's too bad you lost your tree.
Yeah, I should say. Good luck, Lucy. Thank you.
I like her description of her lawn, the bee lawn.
Yeah. I think more and more people are thinking about that, aren't they?
Yeah.
At least we're hearing
from
them.
Yep.
Tom, I think, is on the horn, too. He's calling in from St. Louis Park, I do believe, this morning. Thank you for waiting, Tom. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. Great show as always. I have
a question
about grubs. We lost a good portion of our lawn last year to grubs, or what we presume were grubs. When is the proper time to put out the grub prevention products? And then secondly, it seems like there's new species of grubs, unfortunately, invading. I'm not sure if that's true or not. And will these prevention products prevent the new types of species? Thank you.
I don't know about the new species, but what I can tell you about, particularly for and Japanese beetles and June beetles are both kinds of beetles that produce grubs. That's the immature beetle. And I'm looking at our Japanese beetle page right now. if you do indeed have grub issues, and you can tell because you can literally pull that sod back and it comes right up. The roots are all chewed off. It's dead. The grubs have been feeding on it. And if you find that you have that, the grubs that are in the ground right now are pretty mature grubs. They're pretty big. They're hard to control. And they start to pupate into adults around middle of April or so. So they're just starting to change, and they'll emerge in June or so, about the end of June, beginning of July as adults. And so the treatment is recommended actually later in the season after they lay the, after the adults lay their eggs in the soil and the grubs are very immature and small. So that would be more like about July, August, around August or so that you would treat for those. So that's right now, if you treat for grubs, you're going to end up basically, it's going to be hard to kill the larger grubs. And so you want to wait until midsummer or so, about August, to treat for grubs.
Okay, very good. Julie, we have a ton of text messages. I've never seen so
Lightning
many.
Round.
Yeah, maybe so. Is it time, this one says, to overseed and fertilize our lawns?
Not quite. I think that it looks like mid-April or so is when we want to start looking at doing anything in our lawn for, let me just find my calendar. We have a good calendar called the Minnesota Lawn Care Calendar, and it's pretty handy. And according to this, for overseeding, the best time to overseed is actually early August to late September, the fall. But if you're going to do kind of the second best is May through early June. So we still have some time yet to seed. What you want to be looking at in mid-April is crabgrass control. So putting down your pre-emergent, we're coming up to mid-April now. It's April 9th, so probably next week. And you can do that mid-April through mid-May before the crabgrass actually comes out of the ground. So that's what you want to be thinking about right now. And then certainly mowing as your lawns dry out. Your lawns start actively growing, then you can start to think about mowing as well.
Okay. Julie, this listener says, when should I cut back the silver lace vine and how far down? That comes from Chris from Montgomery.
What
silver
kind of
lace vine? Silver lace.
I'm not familiar with that common name. If you know of the scientific name, or if it's a type of clematis or something like that, if you could clarify, that'd be helpful.
Okay, good. We'll see if we can't get a response from Chris. Hello, this one says, I'm a new listener. Thank you very much. Love the show. Question is, given this year's weather, weather's ups and downs, temperature-wise, when can I seed, quote, in quotes, seed my Rudbeckia Herta Prairie Black-Eyed Susan seeds? Did you follow that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I think with the Rudbeckia, you could have started the seeds indoors. You still could do that. Rudbeckia, my experience with seeding Rudbeckia is it's a little tricky. You definitely need to have a lot of light, and you have to have the bottom heat, but you can do it, and you could seed that. But I think you'll want to start seeding when your soil is workable. When, in other words, it's not soaking wet and it's not icy, then you could put down some of that seed out there and see if that germinates. Okay, it takes a while. Rudbeckia and Echinacea will grow the first year. They're not really biennials, but they have to mature through a couple of seasons before they actually produce flowers. There are different varieties that will bloom the first year, but a lot of it that I've at least experienced has been it grows basically a plant the first year, the leaves and the roots, and then the second year it actually is mature enough that it starts to bloom, and then it will bloom reliably every year after that. But Rudbeckia is a little hard to start from seed, but you could sure try. You still have time, and it's only early April, and give that a shot, and then probably also seed it when you can work the soil.
Okay. Here's a question from a listener. Is corn gluten meal useful for crabgrass prevention?
corn gluten meal was popular. It kind of came on the scene from Iowa State back in, I want to say, like the 90s. And it was found to have some pre-emergent properties where it would prevent seed from germinating. But it's very particular, and it's almost like Minnesota's too cold for it to work. So it might work in warmer climates or warmer areas of the United States, but it doesn't work very well for Minnesota. So we've kind of given up on it. It has a little bit of nitrogen additions to what we've also found that is the reason I don't use it is dogs tend to lick it up. Corn gluten meal is used in dog food, and so they tend to eat it off your lawn. So I don't use it for that reason. But also it's kind of a so-so product for Minnesota. And it's very specific on what the temperatures are when it's effective. And you have to do it twice. So it's a little more fussy than people want to mess around with.
Okay. Let's see. This one says, started my tomato seeds a little early. They look leggy or too thin. Is there anything I can do to strengthen them?
It may be time to transplant them into a little bit larger pot. And then start fertilizing them, giving them a dilute fertilizer. I would buy a vegetable fertilizer or a tomato fertilizer and just make a very dilute amount. Make sure they have plenty of light and go with it that way. Sometimes with plants, if you put a little fan, like a muffin fan, blowing gently on those so that they move, that will strengthen the stem as well. So it also helps to kind of create good airflow around the plants. So you could try that too, but usually if they're leggy, they haven't had enough light. That's the other thing too. You want to be sure that you've got a lot of bright light for those plants.
Listener says, I have a well-established lawn on a city-sized lot, and it's mostly Kentucky bluegrass. Most of the lawn gets full sun. I'd like to get my lawn so it's less dependent on watering and is more resilient during droughts. Is there a particular type of grass I can overseed with that's not as water dependent as what I have now?
You know that answer, don't you, Denny?
Fescue.
Fine fescue, yeah. Yeah, fine fescue is a good type of cool season grass. Grows here in Minnesota really well, and it's drought resistant. It also will grow in sun, part sun, and a little bit of shade. And it's also very very hardy. It doesn't require a lot of nutrition, a lot of fertilizer. So it's a good plant to mix in with your Kentucky Blue. In fact, it's often mixed in with lawn mixes. You'll find fine fescue, red fescue, creeping fescue, chewings fescue, other kinds of fescues. And so that would be a type of grass, type of grass seed that you could overseed. And I would do that in August, September. Have your lawn core aerated and then overseed it with a fescue blend to help make sure that seed gets down into around the soil and has good soil to seed contact. So just hang on through this year and then plan to do that in the late summer, early fall.
I think that's a good idea. I think I might do that very thing.
Yeah.
Julie, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Just real quickly, for those that maybe don't know that you, Julie, and your crew there play with a group called The Abiders, are
yes.
you guys going to be up for some gig coming up?
We have two gigs back-to-back. April 22nd will be at Lupine Brewing in Delano, and it'll be a four-piece band. My brother Scott, our friend John Magley, Dr. John, we call him, and Delano. And it'll be a four-piece band. My brother Scott, our friend John Magley, Dr. John, we call him, and Carl and I. And then we'll be the next night, the whole gang, including Andy Anda on violin and Jeff Linus Bagley, our cousin, on sax. The six of us will be at Surfside in Mound. So come on out and see us. Yeah, we got a lot of gigs going on here.
Yeah, during break, you can ask Lawn and Garden questions. We talked about that.
Yeah, that happens. Okay. We had a couple of listeners come out the last time we played on the 26th of March.
All right.
So
good deal.
Great to see them.
All right, Julie, hang on. We'll take this break, be right back with a more Smart Garden show. By the way, in the Twin Cities, we have 32 degrees, and we're heading to near 52 on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. If you're new to the show, thanks for checking us out. We're here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, thanks to folks like Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota helping you out every Saturday. Julie, we have so many text messages.
Right.
I did want to kind of back up there because
you
did request Chris's explanation of the silver lace vine. Now, you may or may not, well, you know this stuff. I'm going to have to try to pronounce do my best. Polygonal Alberti.
Polygonal Alberti. Wow, I might be stumped on this one. I don't know. I'm not.
Isn't he an opera singer?
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't he do something with Clapton?
Yeah, I don't. If you want to pronounce it polygonal. Polygonal. And the texter spelled it A-U-B-E-R-T-I-I, like it's a plural form of something. But
I think the key to knowing about this vine is when it – I think it's a type of clematis.
Okay.
No, maybe not. Is when it actually blooms. If it blooms on new wood, in other words, wood stems that grow from the base at this time of year, or if it blooms on last year's stems, and that's when that's how you would want to tell, you know, whether you cut it all the way back, if it blooms on all new stems that come up from the base, or if it blooms on last year's stems as well. I'm looking at a listing here because I'm in front of my computer from American Meadows, which is a nursery, and it shows the silver lace vine, and it says to prune it in early spring. So that, to me, to control the size. So if it's huge, you can prune it back at this point. So it blooms summer to fall. So it blooms on newer stems, on the new growth and not last year's growth. So it says to prune it in early spring.
Okay. Thank you for that. I noticed, again, we have so many text messages we won't get to. Now, there's a way that folks, if they do have questions, they should get on your website, right, at the U of M.
Yes. Yeah. If you definitely take a look at the website, Yard and Garden, and it's extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden. You can also just search for your what your question is or the topic you're looking for in the search box. And if you want to kind of consult with an Extension volunteer, you can go to Ask Extension. And Master Gardeners are actively answering people's questions via email. You can attach a couple of photos, which is always helpful, and get some answers that way, too.
Okay, good. Here's one that says, hello, love your show. I have a potted Diffenbachia plant and wanted to know if it gets too big or when it does. A portion of it can be cut off, put in water, and replanted in another pot to grow.
You could try propagating it that way. You can also try making a slit in it and wrapping some damp moss around it, like some damp sphagnum moss, and covering.
I think we just lost Julie. Well, let's give it a go. Maybe she'll.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.